This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to the second hour of Tiki and Tierney here on CBS Sports Radio. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. Tiki Barber here on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, and it is that time of year that we all start to get excited about the National Football League. Now, it's going to be very delayed this season, at least before we see real action, because there is no preseason, and it'll be interesting to see how coaches and general managers evaluate talent without having to put the pads on for real. And with that, we start a staple that we've been doing for 8 years here on Tiki and Tierney. Tiki and Tierney's training camp two-a-days, and there's no better way to start than with the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, Dan Quinn. Here he is with Tiki and Tierney training camp two-a-days, the Atlanta Falcons.
It's time for the Tiki and Tierney NFL Training Camp Two-A-Days as we visit all 32 NFL camps to preview the upcoming season.
The Atlanta Falcons, 7-9, second in the NFC South. The Falcons fell short of the postseason last year, but Matt Ryan and Julio Jones looked rejuvenated and now have Todd Gurley at their disposal.
I'm good, man. I mean, I've just been chilling the last couple of months, kind of just working out, doing what I do, and just ready for the season. I guess, you know, didn't play that much last year, so I still got some treads on my legs from that, so I'm excited, man. It's going to be fun.
Rookie A.J. Terrell joins Deion Jones, Dante Fowler Jr., and Grady Jarrett on a stout defense. Can Dan Quinn and Matt Ryan take the Falcons back to the top of the South?
And now we're joined by the aforementioned Dan Quinn, head coach since 2015 of the Atlanta Falcons. Coach, welcome to Tiki and Tierney. How you doing today?
Tiki, I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, we're doing good and just getting rolling, man. It's good to be back talking football and even more importantly, man, like playing some football. So we're doing good.
Yeah, I can imagine that this has been a long time coming. The draft was so disjointed. The offseason was, hey, guys, I see you from afar through a video camera. You can't get together. It's all social distance and via Zoom and other things. But, you know, from your perspective as head coach, you've been there since 2015. Previously, you were with the Seahawks as a DC. You know, how odd was this offseason? And more, I guess more importantly, the word I used before, disruptive was it to your process?
Well, I think you have a flow, right? Tiki, in terms of the off season, how it goes. All right, and as a player, hey, these are things I want to work on. This is where I want to get better at. And there's a flow to it. And same thing from coaching. You know, like you went through the players' point of attack. These are some areas you want to go to. You study into some scheme stuff. And so when that flipped, I think two significant things probably took place. One, we learned how to teach even better online. And so finding ways to do that, which was not the norm for coaches. So much of our teaching is in person and hands-on. And so finding ways to like customize the teaching that would be just for you at running back for the install. So like there were definitely things that were good. And I think the second piece that happened is a lot of the players, because we weren't with them, got together to do a lot of things. And you know, the connection and the bonding can take place doing that. And so yeah. I thought those two things were not just at the norm. So for guys working out and throwing together and giving feedback on the things they're hitting on. So when the team came back in, I was expecting to see a little bit further away, but their connections were much stronger than I had anticipated, and so I thought that was a good thing. That was maybe one of the silver linings I wasn't expecting. So in that space, it was different, you know, a lot.
Yeah.
I think, like most things, man, like you find out a hell of a lot and say, all right, you know, where do we go from here?
Yeah, you know, sometimes when mom and dad are out of the house, the kids are responsible. You know, oftentimes they're not, but sometimes they are. They surprise you. You know, from a coronavirus standpoint, the protocols that are all in place, the mask wearing, guys adjusting to that. Are they adhering to it? Are they? Because some places they're dismissive of it in this country still. But how are your guys handling all of the protocols that are necessary to keep everybody safe?
You know what, and that's kind of like, it's one of the cool parts about being on a team, and you definitely can relate to this, like, hey man, like, you got my back and I got yours. This is one of the things that we're going to need to do, you know, in order to play. You know, that's what winning looks like for us right now. Like, I'll take care of your family, you take care of mine, and masks are a part of that for meetings, for working out, and for doing the walkthroughs. And then, you know, football for us is going to begin, you know, really tomorrow. The last week has been strength and conditioning and meetings, but we'll really be, you know, starting this next ramp up and then training camp. So the next 3 weeks around the NFL are going to be big because roles start getting emerged and what a player can do, new guys who are on a team, you know, what would that role be? So there's a lot of cool things that'll take place over the next, you know, 2 to 3 weeks.
We're talking to head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, Dan Quinn, and you mentioned training camp. I remember when I first started, I'm driving up to Albany, New York for Giants training camp. I'm like, oh, this is going to suck. I'm going to be in a dorm for, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and, you know, I'm away from my family. I just had a baby. I mean, it was hard. What are you guys doing logistically with the guys? Are they staying at a hotel or they go home? Like, what's the interaction like right now for training camp residential wise?
Yeah, it's definitely different from the training camp you remember. And I can remember, you know, for me, I growing up in Jersey and, you know, going over to Fairleigh Dickinson to be the Giants before you moved up to Albany. Like, it's a lot different, brother. But I would say we had, you know, a unique opportunity here. There were some dorms that were already on the Falcons campus. And so we utilized those much like a player could have his own, you know, personal locker room, use it for, you know, office where you're doing some of the virtual stuff. So you arrive in the morning because you have the ability to either stay here or be at home, testing, you know, workouts, get into practice. And then after practice, that's when, you know, that downtime for a player, where do you go? So for us, we're fortunate there's a spot here, you know, for the players. We'll do some things online, like the next install, and then have a walkthrough in the evening to kind of, you know, get prepped to go for it again. So the process of the camp is good. I think the newest players, you know, they're the ones that have the most studying, you know, the most things to get connected. And I think that part's gone well, Tiki. Now you know what it is as a player, like it's the timing, the reaction. Those are the things, like, you can't do that online, man. Like, that has to only take place on the field.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right. Now, you're eventually going to get on field, and eventually you're going to get in the pads. There is no preseason this year, Coach. So, what's the evaluation plan like? How can you know, right? This guy just has it. He didn't play much. He didn't play, you know, particularly well. But I saw it on this play, special teams or whatever. We want to keep that guy. How are you going to do that this year?
Well, I think a number of ways. One, I think going into it, you have a good sense on a handful of players, right? So you have a good sense of where they're at, what we can count on from them in that space. And there's another group of players that think of the improvement so many guys make from like year one to year two.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Now you need to be able to see those. And so we'll do some scrimmaging, you know, different than we've done in the past. So it wasn't just, oh, here's it, you know, a normal training camp format. You had to create some preseason games, so to speak, to put them into live situations to get the evaluation. So we've got a few of those, you know, spread out, you know, over the next 3 weeks, so we can almost simulate what that would look like. Of course, it won't be exactly the same, but hey, those are the guidelines, and that's where we'll go. So we're going to try and make some real significant moments. All right, coaches off the field, just truly scrimmage ones to get some good opportunities to do some evaluating.
Yeah, no, they're going to love that. If you're a football player, you love hitting, even if you hate getting hit. All right, let's get that. That was all the administrative stuff, Coach. Let's get to the nitty gritty here. Todd Gurley comes over in free agency. The Rams had their issues. It is what it is, but it's your gain. Tell us about Todd, because I love him. I think he's a great kid. When he's on, he's really on. What can we expect from him this year? And are you concerned about some of the health issues that plagued him in his last 2 years, really, with the Rams? Well,
it's so clear, you know, in terms of the style and the way that he plays. And that's why, you know, seeing him in their offense and, you know, the one cut, whether it's wide zone or his ability to, you know, make someone miss on the edge, those were things that were, like, so easy to see from the Ram tape and competing against him.
Yeah.
I think what's nice about when you trade for a player or sign a free agent is the connection and seeing what that person – not only as a ball player, but like what they would bring to your team. And so he has got real stuff to him in such a strong and good way. And so connection with the defensive players, I'm sure you had that, you know, in New York. Like, it's not just with the running backs, but the players who can, you know, multiply, you know, across the ball, you know, expand on the offense just by their connection. Those are really significant guys. And we're fortunate that we have that with Todd, and he's starting to build relationships. You can see, you know, with other guys, not just at running back, but at receiver, at quarterback, at linebacker. And so those are the things to do. I've always been impressed with him, especially down in the red zone.
Yeah.
You want to see him catch, and those are the things in the strength and conditioning phase. You just see him get into the flow of the offense. So the next 3 weeks will be about him getting connected, seeing the blocks, you know, how does it all time up. Those are the things, you know, and the offensive line getting to know him as well.
Yeah, it's a dance. I always used to tell people, it's like this ballet that's going on. You guys think it's like mauling. It's like this thing's got to happen perfectly. Otherwise, it's not happening at all.
Yeah, you're trying to set up linebackers and DBs and get
them
in and cut and protections. And so that part, he really, you know, came in rock solid. And you can tell he definitely has a chip on the shoulder. He put work in during the offseason. Just, you can tell, like, when a guy's ready to roll, and he's certainly one in that category.
Yeah, I love that. Head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, Dan Quinn, is joining us here on Tiki and Tierney. Coach, last season was rough, the start especially. 1-7 you started, then 6-2 to finish it. Now, I think that saying momentum is overrated leading into the next year, it's just an overrated narrative, but you did do things better. And I know, and I'm tied a little bit here because of your defensive coordinator, Raheem Morris. He and my brother are boys, as you know. But he became the DC, took some of that off of your plate. But what else changed, right? It just felt like the mentality, the urgency, the meaning it changed for the Falcons at the end of last year. How do you keep that and drive into 2020?
Yeah, I think that's important that you just said that, because if you don't, then all the pain of going the start of it was for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have some lessons that are learned. And one thing for sure I thought that the team really connected on more was their ability to play complementary football. You know, you create a takeaway and the offense goes to capitalize on it. You pin, you know, somebody down with a good punt, and the defense keeps them down there to, you know, so they don't flip the field. And so having that connection in all three phases, that's when you're at your best, man, as a team. And for whatever reason, it took a lot longer than we wanted for us to find that connection and to find that complementary football. And so for sure, those lessons were learned. And we talked a lot about the lessons. You're right. The team doesn't stay the same in the NFL from year to year. There's a one-year shelf on that, different from maybe the NBA or some other things. But the lessons are certainly able to be applied year to year. And so that's where, you know, our focus went. And we didn't back off of that right from the beginning. We'd rather address and say, you know, why did we win? And also, you know, why did we lose? And make sure we're really clear around both of them.
Yeah, let's talk about your quarterback, Matt Ryan. He's not old, but he's 34 at this point, and successive 7-9 seasons. I know that people were putting you on the hot seat. I don't think that Arthur Blank felt the same way, and I know you feel comfortable going forward. But what is the pressure that you're feeling, not just for yourself, but for the team and for Matt Ryan, who's one of those great quarterbacks? He has an MVP under his belt, but he hasn't got that elusive Super Bowl yet. Like, what's the pressure on you guys collectively?
I don't even know if it's the hunger is probably what I would say, really. Like, you just want to relentlessly go after Tiki, you know, when you're just feeling that space that you want to get the job done and being in the moment. So I don't look too far down the line, you know. I want to make sure, hey, man, let's do all we can to throw a hell of a camp and get ready. And so Matt, as a competitor, you know, when you step out on the practice field, you better have your game right, you know, or he's going to let you know because he's going to have his right. And so those are the things to me that that always light me up about coaching him and guys like Julio. You know, the standard that they set about how they go after things, it makes a lot of other things, you know, fall into place when your very best players are right at the top of it in terms of their humility, their hunger for it, and how smart they are about the game. So pretty easy to get in line here in Atlanta based on two of those guys for sure.
We're chatting with head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, Dan Quinn, here on CBS Sports Radio. You know, we saw some speculation, Coach, that if college football is fully canceled, I know you've been following this in the news, and the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have canceled their fall seasons. They may play in the spring. The ACC, SEC, and Big 12 have not. But there's speculation that if all of it goes away, that Saturday football, NFL football, could become a reality. Would you embrace that, or would it be kind of off?
I didn't embrace anything with football, brother. I'd like to be, if that's part of, you know, some things that we can do to help, you know, just for the whole country. Like, we need football, and I'm sure you were part of, you know, from all the way back in 2001 and the impact that football had after 9/11. I had just started in the NFL out in San Francisco, and, you know, that was a significant time. I'm not comparing anything. I just want to say, like, how impactful football can be and how like grateful I was to be a part of that. And I'm hopeful, I really am, that we're able to have an impact on our country with football, making some positive impact to where it's going. I'm sick for the college guys and the coaches because I know how much they put into it. And so for the seasons that get, you know, postponed or canceled, I know that hurts. And, you know, for today, for those guys in college who are finding out they're not going to have a season, you know, there's some brokenhearted guys. But I'm hopeful that there's a spring, there's, you know, something, you know, at the end of this that, you know, we're able to make it up.
Yeah, I hope so as well. Now, Coach, this was a odd year, obviously with the pandemic, but the social justice issues that have been going on around the country. And Atlanta, I'm not going to say it's a hotbed because that just sounds like it gives a negative connotation, but we know the culture and the history down in Atlanta. And Todd Gurley, when we had him on a few weeks ago, he talked about this. You know, have you talked to your team about what's going to happen once the season starts, whether it's the kneeling or the protest that may happen? Like, have you talked to your team about this, and what do you expect is going to happen?
Yeah, we haven't got that far as the opening day, but we do talk about a number of topics. And one that was on our mind early on was voting and how do we make a difference together and how do we first make our impact? And there's guys that in our team that make up 27 different states, you know, so making sure you're squared away from registration and absentee voting and all of those things to go. So, yeah, we spend a lot of time together. And I think one thing that's come through this spring, Tiki, it's, you know, it's a lot about football, but we've also found our voice on some other areas like race and social injustices. And I think that's a good thing for us to make sure that conversations that have needed to be had are now taking place. And I think it's my job and others like myself to make sure those conversations have space to do them. And we certainly do here. And we want to make those moments available for us to talk about. So we haven't got to the season yet. We're kind of just put one thing in front of another for the time being, but yeah, we do spend the time in that space.
Yeah, I know the Players Coalition is heavily involved in the NFL votes, so definitely this November's election is enormous. Coach, I really appreciate you taking some time. I enjoyed it. I'm wishing you the best of luck. I really have an affinity for Raheem and for Arthur Blank, and now you for joining us. Thanks so much, and good luck this season. I appreciate everything.
Yeah, well, much respect to you, brother. I've followed you forever, and again, friendship with your brother and the guys. So, yeah, really glad to be on with you, and hope to get connected with you another time.
Most certainly. We'll talk soon, Coach. Be well and good
All
luck.
Right.
Dan Quinn, head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. They had a couple of good seasons there, an 11-win season, a 10-win season. Then they fell on some hard times, mostly because of injuries on the defensive side of the ball, 7-9 and 7-9 respective seasons. But they finished last year on a tear at 6-2, beating both the New Orleans Saints and the San Francisco 49ers. So we know the talent is there. They just have to stay healthy. It's great to talk to head coach Dan Quinn. I like that guy. All right, the Cowboys are trying a unique idea to keep their players safe. Will it work? We'll talk about it next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is sponsored by GEICO. Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what GEICO could already save you. So, what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. Tiki Barber here on CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network. Great conversation with Dan Quinn, the first of our training camp two-a-days of 2020, head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. Never had a conversation with him before, but he's really interesting and straightforward. Obviously, he's got a great defensive background, and moving out of the head coach DC slash role from last year, handing that over to Raheem Morris and their linebacker coach, obviously changed things significantly for that Atlanta Falcons team. They were giving up, I believe it was 31.8 points of game for the first half of the season. That fell to 19.5 points per game in the second half, and as a result, they went 6-2. So huge expectations, obviously always for a quarterback who has an MVP under his belt, but they need to get back on track. But the NFC South, and I didn't have time to ask him about this, is obviously now loaded because Tom Brady is now with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Aaron Taylor join us in our next segment. He's our CBS Sports Network NFL analyst to talk about all the things that are happening in college sports. But let's get to this story that we saw about, first of all, it happened with the New Orleans Saints. They formed the bubble within their hotel, and now we're starting to see this with the Dallas Cowboys, as some players, I think probably all of them eventually, are being smart about their social circles. It was interesting just talking to Coach Quinn, and I don't know if I realized this, but on the Atlanta Falcons campus, they have dorms. Not that, you know, there's a college there, but there's just old dorms that are there. So they're able to kind of isolate like they're at a training camp situation, even though they're at home. Which is unique. And so they probably have a somewhat of a bubble themselves. I don't think guys need to leave if that's the case. Well, the Cowboys have started to do this. We saw that the New Orleans Saints were going to do this at the beginning of the season, and now the Cowboys are. And this is so smart. We know that bubbles work. We've seen it with the NBA. There have been another week of zero cases. We saw it with MLS, who was also in a bubble down in Florida. We saw it with the WNBA, also in a bubble down in Florida. I believe the Premier Lacrosse League, Paul Rabel's unit, also didn't have any cases in their little bubble. The NHL in two cities up in Canada, they have not had any cases in a bubble. It works, and but for the NFL in total, it's impossible. And we've hit this many times, and we talked about it yesterday even, to get an entire division, say, or a conference into certain cities to play and keep you isolated. It's just logistically impossible. There's too many people to manage and to take care of, to test. It just doesn't make any sense. But if you are going to do this on a small scale, inside for your team and with, you know, guys being smart about, you know, going out, wearing masks, washing their hands, having the antibacterial gels and stuff, then I think this is the only way to do this. And I'm surprised that we haven't heard that other teams are taking this type of philosophy. Even if it is expensive to do it, you basically got to take over, as the Saints did, four floors of a hotel. But think about, like, your life at home, you know, the non-athlete, you know, the mom or the dad or the business owner who's forced to work from home. If you're smart and doing it the right way, and we encourage everybody to continue to be vigilant about this, even though it's been 22 weeks or 21 weeks or whatever it's been since we all started universally staying home and being safe about this. Think about the circles that you keep. I mean, we have three or four families that we will distance with in the backyard, but we're not randomly going places and going out to dinner. And if we do, it's pickup or sitting outside. You have to keep your circle tight in these uncertain times. And it's not anybody's fault, because you can unwittingly be positive for the coronavirus and not know it. I think the same thing applies for athletes. We're just, as we always say, a small sample of society at large, but kind of a microcosm of what goes on. The same things that affect athletes in bubbles or outside of bubbles is the same thing that affects the regular person, you know, in America. And so the fact that the Cowboys are doing this, and it sounds like they're doing it kind of without the, you know, the direction of the team is even better. It just tells you that just like everyone else, athletes are scared about this, man. They're nervous about this. They don't know exactly, you know, what could happen. You see, you know, the issues that are in college football and the myocarditis, which I had never heard of, you know, not in, as far as healthy athletes are concerned. I mean, maybe it's something I heard, you know, for you know, someone who was sick or, you know, in a story, but never for a healthy athlete, you know, having to worry about their heart becoming enlarged and having long-term benefits or long-term detriments. So you're scared. Right? You want to play. You know you want to be a part of this $15 billion business and earn a great salary and build a name for yourself and enrich your family and all those other things, but not at the cost of risking your life. So this is a no-brainer. By the end of the week or maybe early next week, I think we might see all the teams trying to do something like this because it's the smart way. And as the other major sports have shown that are operating right now, save Major League Baseball, which is trying to get themselves in order and ultimately may push themselves into a bubble in the postseason. If you're in a bubble and you're isolated and you're following the right protocols, the season's going to go off without a hitch, and you're going to provide entertainment and joy to fans and give yourself an opportunity to make a living. This is a no-brainer. I know the Cowboys and the Saints are doing it. I'm pretty sure we're going to see a lot more teams do this as well. It just makes sense. Bubbles work. All right. What happens with the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC? Notre Dame legend Aaron Taylor will join us next. But before we get there, let's get an update from Bob Uessler. Bob, take it away. Tonight at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, relive the UEFA Champions League quarterfinals as Zapata Atlantica squad battle Neymar and PSG. Don't miss the action on CBS Sports Network. Tiki Barber here on CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. I got into a little bit of a tiff with my twin brother yesterday, who's a Manchester United fan. And Manchester United is in the Europa League, which is a step down from the Champions League. He got mad at me because Liverpool won it last year. Who happens to be my squad? Anyways, enough talk about European soccer. Let's get to some American football. And we're joined on the line now by our good buddy Aaron Taylor, who is the CBS Sports Network NFL analyst and obviously famed and great Notre Damer. What's happening, Aaron? How you doing, man?
What's going on, Teak, man? What did you have to do to finally get your own show and have some breathing space stuck in that on that dead weight?
I tell you, right? You know what it was? It was the mojo when I took my son out to Notre Dame last year. I forget what middle of the season, and I saw you on the wall. Did I ever send you that picture? I don't know if I ever sent you that picture, but I'm walking with AJ, and I'm like, I know that guy. It's Aaron Taylor. How do you feel about your I was going to say they're independent, but they're not independent right now. Your Notre Damers, your Golden Domers joining the ACC. It's kind of necessary, but are you surprised?
It's funny, man. We live in a world where Notre Dame has joined a conference and Nebraska is trying to enter the transfer portal and go independent. It's been a crazy ride in college football, man, and what a crazy hot mess our sport is. But I think Notre Dame has always kind of been, you know, friends with benefits with the ACC, but given the COVID circumstances and everything that's going on, we stepped it up to a promise ring, bro. We put a ring on that finger, at least for this next season. So I think that's a win-win for everybody. And I know the ACC is really happy to have Notre Dame be a part of their conference for this year and vice versa. I don't know if we'll get to actually see what Notre Dame looks like in a conference and wreak the havoc that I hope that my alma mater could do, but for now, they're scheduled to play, and there's some pretty damn good matchups that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I think it's interesting for a season because now Clemson cannot be unopposed in their run basically to the college football playoff. There was no one to knock them off. Teams aren't strong enough. Even the powerhouses like Miami or Florida State aren't strong enough. Now there is a legitimate perennial top 10 team in Notre Dame. Are you surprised that the ACC and the Big 12 and the SEC are still holding on? Because from everything that we've heard, the medical advice has been the same. It's just that the interpretation individually and the individual conferences has been different. Are you surprised by this?
No, not at all. You remember back in 9/11, the SEC was the very last school to cancel their game. I believe it was Tennessee going to play Florida, which is a huge rivalry, and they were basically the last game to cancel then. To those of us who live on the West Coast and other parts of the country, football is a sport that we love and it's part of our DNA. But for the people in the South, it is literally a religion. And part of what I suspect is going on is that the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, in that footprint, they're worried about their fan bases and the blowback. What's happened out in the real world on Main Street is now hitting University Drive. And unfortunately, this novel virus has been politicized, and what's taken place in Washington and red and blue and liberal, Democrat, Republican, that all of that stuff is somehow trickling and percolating into college football. So I'm not surprised that the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 are vying for more time, because that's the smart move. It's prudent to do so. But you hit the nail on the head, man. I'm pissed that I have no idea on what to believe. There's so much contradictory information out there. The Pac-12 is saying that the myocarditis, the inflammation of the heart that's secondary to COVID-19, is enough for them to shut their league down. The SEC is like, no, we've been testing that the whole time. It's not a big deal at all. So I think that at the end of the day, the three remaining Power 5 conferences are unfortunately going to end up the same place that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten did yesterday when they put their seasons on hold.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense for 18 to 22-year-old kids to be exposed to that risk at such a young age. Aaron Taylor, CBS Sports Network college football analyst, is joining us here on Tiki and Tierney. Now, Aaron, we've hit this a couple of times this week. Nobody's representing the player. Now, we know that the players, and Trevor Lawrence said this, and Justin Fields said this. This is obviously before the Big Ten canceled. We want to play, and they want their voice heard. They want to be exercise their rights, because we all know why. It's an economic opportunity that is presented as a college football opportunity, obviously referring to the National Football League. Should they have a say in this, or is this above their, I was going to say pay grade, but they're not paid yet. Is this above them?
Well, it's interesting, man, and I'm glad we're on radio so we can have a somewhat nuanced conversation, because Twitter is not the place for that. The players absolutely deserve to have a voice. Are they qualified themselves to enact and be that voice? Probably not. I certainly wouldn't have been when I was 17 when I showed up on campus in South Bend, but having somebody represent their interests that is qualified is exactly what the coaches are doing. It's exactly what the presidents and the chancellors and the athletic directors are doing. Every major stakeholder in college football has seen an exponential growth to the revenue and the benefits that they've enjoyed over the last 15 years, except for the players. Now, making a request like the Pac-12 United players did of 50% of the revenue, probably want to walk that back a little bit.
That was a little aggressive. That was a little aggressive, Aaron.
That may be where I might have tried to end up, but not start. Uh-huh. But then you saw a very thoughtful Big Ten group of players come out and have some very lucid, clear, thoughtful, attainable goals that they've laid out. And a lot of that has been adopted and enacted. So in the right circumstance, I think players can have some sort of representation, although it can't be a unionization. It would have to be some sort of association type of a representation. And some people floated the idea about the NFLPA possibly having an interest and or capability to do that. I've got some mixed emotions about that, but at some point, I think the ecology that we've seen in big-time college athletics is going to change.
Yeah,
players have found their voice. They've got to unify that voice, but the opportunity's never been greater than it is right now in this very moment for them to exercise and create better outcomes generationally.
I think you articulate that very well, Aaron. And when I talked, when I started this show, I was talking about another association, the NCAA, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, which is 1,098 member organization across obviously FBS all the way down to D3. And my take was, it's just too big. It's like the Randolph-Macon of the world versus the LSU of the world. The decisions that govern both aren't congruent. And so there's no way that you can come to consensus and therefore leadership. There's this massive leadership void. Now, if an association also started representing the players, especially for the Power Five revenue generating schools and even some of those Group of Five schools that do financially well, that changes this system to one that's more like professional, not quite, but more like it. Do you think that would be a better way to go about this? Because what this coronavirus has exposed is the fact that there is no leadership across college football.
It's a disaster, and it's been exposed in the most embarrassing and damning ways possible. The kicking the can down the road, the passing the buck, the guys, it's this cruel and dark exercise in who's on first. Like, nobody's willing to step up and make the tough decisions. And then the board of directors kicks it back to the board of trustees, and it's this pass the buck. And at the end of the day, the NCAA will come out and be like, hey, we fully support our member institutions and the decisions that they made, but those were theirs in and of themselves, and we have no liability or say so in it. For lack of a better way to describe it. So yes, some sort of retooling of the oversight in collegiate athletics is long overdue. I think the one voice that I respect coming out of the NCAA has been Dr. Brian Hainlein, chief medical officer for the NCAA. He has been consistent, and he has been clear about what his recommendations are being, which isn't easy to do. He's walked the line extremely delicately and precisely, but the leadership that has been necessary, that has been missing, is what's created this damn problem in the first place. And if we had had that from the beginning, we may not find ourselves on the brink of losing college football in totality in 2020.
I think that is absolutely right. Aaron Taylor, CBS Sports Network college football analyst, is joining us here on CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network. Now, there has been some speculation that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 may join, like the Ivy League, and play in the spring. The Ivy League is great. You play interconference. It's small. There's not big TV revenue. It's just kind of, we're just playing because we're going to play. That's not feasible for big-time Power 5 college football, is it?
Yes, it is, in my opinion. And what kills me is the coaches are saying, oh, there's no way that we could play two seasons in the spring, yet most of them are pushing to be able to play in the middle of a pandemic that's a once-in-a-100-year event. So there's a disconnect there. That's one of the things that I have yet to be able to understand. One of the other things that's a head-scratcher for me is, if you're bringing the student body back to campus, which includes the football players, as, let's say, Ohio State is doing, how in the world is just not playing football going to be the solution when they're going to be on campus and exposed to possibly getting the virus in the first place? So to me, the question is, should college students and college be open in the first place? Then secondarily, should student athletes or athletes that also are students be playing the game? The bottom line is this, man. I don't know what the deal is going to be about whether or not they play in the spring, but it is possible. The year that we won the Super Bowl, 1996, we started in mid-July. We had four preseason games, and let's be real, that's probably played in 1.5, maybe 2 of those in terms of total number of snaps.
Yeah.
Then you had 16 games over 17 weeks. We had a bye. Then we went 3-0 and finished at the end of January, having played 23 football games in a 6-month window.
Wow.
Is it possible? Hell yes. Is it going to be hard and tax their body? Yes. So the solution is this, Tiki. You play a condensed or reduced season in the spring, 6, 7, possibly 8 games conference only. That becomes your default spring football. Then you give the guys off March, April, May, June, July, come back in August, possibly have a condensed season back then where it's maybe 10 conference games, but have the postseason look a little bit more familiar like we've been. Unusual circumstances require unusual circumstances. It is possible. And if they had started thinking about this 5 months ago, then it would be much more viable solution than wait until now to take their head out of the sand and try to figure out what plan B is going to be.
Yeah, no, you're right, man. How long did it take you to think about that? Was it quick? Or you've been formulating that for a couple of weeks?
I've been chewing on it, and you know, Urban Meyer, who I couldn't have any more respect for, his track record speaks for himself, is talking about how difficult it's going to be. Of course you're going to lose seniors that have NFL aspirations, possibly some juniors. But when you're talking about this unique set of circumstances, you have to be creative. You have to think outside the box. And I think the players not only would be able to do it, they would love the opportunity to have this once-in-a-lifetime two seasons and one calendar year opportunity to go do the thing that they felt that they're on this planet to do.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. Aaron Taylor, CBS Sports Network, college football analyst. You're going to lose some of those kids that are going to go to the National Football League, but that just is what it is. It creates an opportunity. We only have 1 minute here, Aaron. Are we going to have a national champion of the 2020 college football season?
No, and furthermore, we're not going to have a season. I think where we're going to end up with the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC, unfortunately and regrettably, is the same exact spot that the Big 10 and the Pac-12 find themselves in yesterday when they shut it down. They were first, but the dominoes are falling. Remember, the Ivy League led us into this whole deal, canceling their postseason basketball play, which then led to the NBA shutting down, which then led to the NCAA tournament being shut down, and they were the first to shut down their football season and move it to the spring. At the end of the day, when you get into the cage with the gorilla, it's the gorilla that decides when the dance is over. COVID-19 is the gorilla, and nothing is going to change in the next 6 weeks.
I like to hear that, man. I mean, that means that my son going to Princeton as opposed to Notre Dame is going to be a good thing for him. I'm just kidding, Aaron. Thank you, Aaron. I appreciate you. It was awesome. Great insight and great opinions on all the things that are happening in college football. You're the man. Appreciate you.
All right, Tiki. Take care, brother.
Well, Aaron Taylor, CBS Sports Network's college football analyst. That's interesting. I mean, he's probably right. I would tend to fall on that side as well, that college football is not going to happen. As unfortunate as it is and as strong as the ACC and the SEC and the Big 12 are hanging on, it just feels like they're climbing a massive uphill battle to try to get it done. We will find out probably sooner rather than later. All right, maybe you missed it, but Dame Lillard went off last night, and a former coach says he deserves a lot more respect for his career. We'll hit that on the other side of the hour. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.